Hello, and welcome to this special science podcast from the 2008 AAAS Annual Meeting in Boston, Massachusetts. It's February 18th. I'm Robert Frederick. In this short podcast, the public understanding of the major transformations in evolution. When Darwin published The Origin of the Species, he wrote that he was challenging what the great majority of naturalists believed, quote, that species were immutable productions and had been separately created. Nearly 150 years later, the predictive power of Darwin's natural selection hypothesis and the enormous amounts of data have made evolution one of the cornerstones of modern biology. But that doesn't mean it, in turn, isn't challenged.
I got no problem challenging Darwin any day of the week. I mean, that's what we do, is we figure out where the evidence leads.
Andrew Ellington is an evolutionary biologist at the University of Texas, where he works on understanding how life began. He says there are three major points that define the current understanding of the origin of life in his field.
One, we can make the stuff of life from non-life. Two, there is a lineal progression of nucleic acids from very simple replicators to more complex replicators to more complex replicators still, and we can look at these as little snapshots of experiment, which may or may not be exactly what happened at origins, which I think we'll really never know, but give you some idea of what's possible. And finally, when we can look back from the things we know about tetrapods and whatnot, then we can see the commonality that is consistent with an early RNA world.
Ellington says we won't know for certain because there's no record. He studies molecules and cells, after all. This is one of the big gaps.
Between Andy's talk and mine is 3 billion years of boredom, occupied by the evolution of sex and a few other sort of minor events.
Douglas Irwin is director of the National Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian. As a paleobiologist, he studies the events leading up to the Cambrian radiation, where the fossil record shows an enormous variety of different plants and animals.
The origin of animal body plans results from the interaction of three different factors, environmental challenge, developmental potential, and ecological opportunity. And it's the interaction between those that's produced this event we know as the Cambrian radiation.
But there are still questions to be answered.
Why is the distribution of these morphologies so clumpy? We don't see smooth intermediates between these diversity of forms. The classic biological explanation has been extinction.
But again, there's not enough evidence. Though more evidence is being found and the gaps in understanding are getting smaller. Ted Deschler, a zoologist at the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia, studies the invasion of land by plants and animals, including how fish evolved to be tetrapods capable of scooting about on land.
The fins of the fish were changing significantly to the limbs of the early tetrapods, as well as some of the medial fins. We lost the medial fins. Digits originate. We lose the fin rays. There's a reorientation of the paired fins. The skull changes significantly in shape and architecture. Lots and lots of characters through here. And you can understand, this was a big evolutionary leap. This was something which the general public would have a hard time saying, how can you get from there to there? And understandable. And this, unfortunately, is really the icon that we're still stuck with in many ways, in textbooks, in museum exhibits. People still sort of have this fish that you're trying to tell people came on land.
But as biological anthropologist John Relithford from SUNY College puts it,
okay, let's start with the basics. Humans evolved.
There's nothing quite like saying that people evolve that upsets many in the public, because it is personal and in conflict with what people may learn in other places. As a result, Relithford says that the public is ready to doubt evolutionary science every time there's a new discovery, such as the discovery of Homo floresiensis, the hobbit fossils.
Such new discoveries are frequently seen in the papers as overturning current thought, uprooting the family tree, and so on. The implication here is that science is not doing a good job, else why would we be so surprised by something new? Which brings the next question, why are we getting paid to do something we don't know? It's because we're missing the picture here. We have to continually stress that science is not a final and specific body of knowledge so much as it is a way of knowing, a method by which to learn more about the natural world. We know a lot about our origins, more so than when I started graduate school long time ago, but we still have a lot to learn.
That kind of hedging that scientists do is not always something those who refute evolution also do. Those who take the Bible literally, for example, aren't necessarily hedging their statements. Martin Sturzdieck is with the Institute for Learning Innovation. He researches how the public learns and says everyone can be bullheaded.
To the two extremes, one thing you may want to do at some point is to ask either side, is there anything I can tell you that would make you change your mind? What would that be? What would you accept as evidence that your position ought to be reconsidered, not change? You want to think about it. And that would be a good start. That is the part that is the listening that we oftentimes don't do. We just assume that we are sending the right information and people will digest it and then they will change. But we first need to know what it takes for them as individuals to start thinking about stuff.
And Sturzdieck's advice seems to apply to all sides of the issue.
If you tell them more about these wonderful things, it will not solve the problem because they don't listen. So more information doesn't help. You need to first address their issues. Otherwise, you're just pounding against a wall.
And there are questions for both sides to consider, rather than insisting that someone reconcile your fact or truth with their views.
I mean, instead of saying reconcile it, you will ask the other person, what is your perspective on knowing? When do you know? Is it revealed knowledge that comes from somewhere? Are you accepting evidence? Are you accepting that there's a truth out there? And if you accept there's a truth, do you think we can find it? And you can ask people to go down that path and identify where they stand.
So in addition to thinking about how best to increase the public understanding of the major transformations in evolution, scientists should be trying to understand the public itself, too.
The public as a 45-year-old and what that person knows about biology and how is it linked to what they learned 20 years or more ago in a college or 30 years ago in high school. And it's these issues that we are concerned about at this point in time. Students are a captive audience. We have much more power to change what they hear and learn. But the public itself is a different animal altogether, to use a bad metaphor. But one of the big problems we are facing when we think about the public understanding of science, and let alone the public understanding of evolution, is that there is the public understanding of fill-in-your-issue-here problem. Which means there are lots and lots of people who vie for the public understanding and public attention of God knows what is important in this world, ranging not just from science and the environment to finance to all sorts of other things. And you are competing with that. So you have a public that has an attention that it needs to split between all these important issues in the world.
Thank you for listening to this, the last of our special podcasts from the 2008 AAAS Annual Meeting in Boston, Massachusetts. If you have any comments or suggestions for the show, please write us at sciencepodcast@aaas.org. The show is a production of Science Magazine and of AAAS, the Science Society. Jeffrey Cook composed the music, and I'm Robert Frederick. On behalf of Science Magazine and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for joining us. Thank you.